Support for Interlochen Public Radio comes from the FIM Group at 111 Cass Street, the independently owned Traverse City investment management firm that is now accepting new clients. More information at fimg.net.
Good morning. I'm Bob Allen, and this is Points North. We're going to be talking about carbon footprint today. Carbon footprint is the total amount of greenhouse gases produced in everyday activities. Some people and organizations are motivated to reduce their carbon footprint because they want to protect the environment. Others think it just makes good sense to use resources wisely and to reduce waste. And if it saves costs, well, all the better. A couple of years ago, both Traverse City and Grand Traverse County signed on to a climate protection agreement to reduce their carbon dioxide emissions. The first step was to figure out a baseline, where they're starting from, before setting a goal to reduce greenhouse gases. The baseline year is 2005. A local nonprofit organization called SEEDS used a grant from the Michigan Public Service Commission to help the county and the city do an inventory on their fossil fuel use. Sarna Salzman is with us today. She's the executive director of SEEDS. Good morning, Sarna. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Good morning.
Also here is Jim Cooper, marketing manager for Traverse City Light and Power. Good morning, Jim.
Hi, Bob.
Sarna, you set the baseline year as 2005 from where to measure how much energy is being used in Traverse City and Grand Traverse County. Why 2005 is the baseline?
Really, it was the earliest year that we could get comprehensive data for. A lot of systems were digitized by 2005, and that's the main reason.
So there's no particular significance to that?
Not the year, just the data.
What sorts of things did you measure to get a footprint?
We measured all utility use, from electricity to, you know, natural gas. We measured vehicle miles traveled. We measured waste production, stuff going to the landfill. The city and the county wanted to take a special look at the airport, and so we did that. And we also looked at agriculture, and those are two sectors that are a little unusual in the cities for a climate protection program. So the international organization was pretty excited to have us take a look at those sectors.
So this is coming under some sort of international organization that has a standard way of measuring all these things?
Right. We're using a software that that is part of an international movement of climate protection and municipalities. And so the data that we came up with is really easily comparable to data across the country and internationally.
And what does the footprint look like? I mean, you looked at Traverse City, you looked at the county, you looked at the community. What is the footprint for this area?
Pretty average for American city, for American region, especially one with winter as a consideration.
And what does it tell you in terms of where most of the energy is being used?
Well, there's a difference between where most of the energy is being used and where most of the greenhouse gas emissions are coming from. So most of our emissions are coming currently from the use of electricity, about half of them.
And where are the rest of it coming from?
It's coming from, burning other sources of fuel, and also from landfilling our garbage primarily.
So what kind of goal is the city or the county looking to set to try to either reduce emissions or reduce energy use?
The county commissioners have stated a goal of 25% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions from that baseline year of 2005 by the year 2012. The city is still considering what goal that they want to set for themselves. We've also recommended to the city a 25% reduction. And then the whole countywide community, we need to get the community commission together and ratify a goal. And we've suggested a goal of zero emissions growth by 2012.
So how do you get a community commission together?
I think we're going to use the tool of the grand vision as one of the ways to engage the wider community and pull a bunch of stakeholders together. But, you know, we're having public forums. We had one last week, and we'll have a couple others in different parts of the county, and just really try and draw a lot of stakeholder engagement in it, from citizens to utilities, you know.
So is there anything crucial being left out in terms of the data? Did you get pretty much everything that you need?
Yeah, I think obviously there are things that got left out, but for the size of picture that we're trying to capture, I think that we have a really solid picture of where we are as a region, and it's something that we can use as a baseline to monitor our future progress from.
So what are the sort of low-hanging fruit? What are the easiest opportunities to reduce energy?
It sounds really trite, but it's light bulbs. You know, it's our electricity use. We got to turn stuff off. We got to change equipment out, get efficient with stuff, and then we got to stop throwing stuff away, putting stuff in the landfill. You know, we're throwing tons of things that are recyclable or compostable away, and it's just a waste, and it's showing up in our greenhouse gas emissions footprint.
How does stuff from the landfill show up in the greenhouse gas emission footprint?
Well, methane is produced out of landfills, and methane is a particularly potent greenhouse gas. So that's the main way that we're measuring waste from a greenhouse gas emissions perspective. And you know, as an ecological organization, we hate to see valuable resources just getting chucked and buried for generations. Doesn't really make sense. And I just want to mention the third thing that we really need to do is drive less and carpool more.
To save on gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, specifically out of this inventory that SEASD has done for the city and the county, what sorts of things do you see Light and Power doing to reduce emissions and save energy?
Well, I think Sarn is right on target here, and you kind of go back to what your mother told you to do when you were a little kid, and that's turn the lights off when you leave the room. The light bulbs are definitely a part of that, using compact fluorescent lights, and people have to realize that as soon as you change out that 60-watt incandescent light with a 13-watt compact fluorescent or CFL, you instantly save all that wattage, the difference in there. So, and you have to get people to realize that. And some people say, "Well, I'll wait till that light bulb burns out before I change it." But you can't do that either. You should really just change your bulbs right away, and because you're saving money as soon as you change that light bulb.
I think one of the suggestions that SEASD made in their report was going to different kind of street lights that save energy, LED street lights, retrofitting that. Would Traverse City Light and Power be part of that? Have you decided that that's something you can do?
Well, that's definitely in the energy saving mix, and there's a company in town that actually makes LED street lights at this point. So we'll actually be installing some of their lights as a test on Front Street. And that'd be the west end of Front Street shortly. We just got those lights the other day, so we plan to put those up within the next month or two.
Oh, that's good. You're actually buying a local product to put in.
Yes, it's support locally as much as you can.
The utility is also being motivated by a new state law that says you have to make gains every year in efficiency for the next several years. How are you going to do that?
Well, this is an interesting process.
Why is that funny?
Interesting is a kind way to, I don't really know.
You're kind of struggling with it a little bit?
Well, we're struggling along with every other municipal utility in IOU, or investor-owned utility in Michigan, because this bill was passed by the legislature in September and was signed into law by the governor in October. Public Act 295, it is called now. And while we've been looking for this type of energy-saving device, basically, you know, which we might call this bill, they want it done instantaneously, so it makes it a little harder to do that. But the bill says they want each utility, each customer class, to reduce their energy usage, and we have to design a program to have that done. We have to have this program implemented, and then we have to verify all these savings. And actually, we have to file with the Michigan Public Service Commission by April 3rd of this year.
So you have, as I understand, you have to have a plan ready by April 3rd, right?
Right, that's right. We have the program is pretty much designed at this point, and we're still working on the implementation. You can design something, we have to figure out how you're going to implement it. But the basic part of the program is to provide rebates, the utility will provide rebates for energy reduction saving measures that the residentials and the business customers can do in their dwellings and in their places of work.
Well, what would be some examples of that?
Well, one of the examples is this compact fluorescent lights that we're talking about, and we got a jump start on this because we recently received a state grant, compact fluorescent state grant, so it's nice to have a program that the state will help pay for. So, and it just this month, actually, the inserts are going out in Light and Power bills that they can get $2 off coupons at local vendors.
So you're going to pay your customers to put some of these devices in, or at least pay some of the cost of putting it in?
Right. Actually, at this point, the compact fluorescents themselves, the $2 off coupons, that will be reimbursed by the state, which is a good program. And then other parts of the program, there'll be rebates for ceiling fans, for example. There'll be rebates if you have that old harvest gold or that old avocado color refrigerator in your basement or in your garage, which has that one loaf of bread in it still. Those are some of the most energy inefficient appliances around. So we're asking people to trade those in, and we're going to help them do that with a rebate.
How much of a rebate?
Well, it has to be decided, but it's probably around $20 to $40. We'll help pick up that fridge for you.
Okay. So that'll start rolling out when? This spring? This summer?
This spring, right. Your plan has to be approved by the Michigan Public Service Commission. We'll have a scheduled input and public input comment period in next month in April, and then as soon as it's officially approved, then we'll probably roll out those programs in May, June, and July.
As I understand it, like 70% of your customers at Traverse City Light and Power are residential, and they use about 13% of the energy. So even if you get the residential users to cut their electricity use in half, you're only getting about a 6% savings in energy efficiency. How can you get some of your bigger commercial customers to become more energy efficient?
Well, that's all part of the plan, and in the commercial part is large in Traverse City, and the usage is large. The numbers are smaller, but the usage is larger, which is normal. Well, there'll be plans set up for the commercial customer also, and that includes some of the CFL programs, but also as you walk through some of the stores in town, you'll see some older 8-foot fluorescent lights, for example, that are they're called T12s, and they use 40 watts. You can replace those with a T8, which is a 32 watt bulb. And when that's done, we'll give a rebate for that to that commercial customer. So you can pick up a lot of quick savings that way just by switching out light bulbs.
You're projecting that these energy savings every year, and you have to do a little bit more every year according to the law,
right?
Are going to cost you more and more each year as well. Who's going to absorb that cost? How is that going to get paid for?
Well, at this current time, the board feels and the staff feels that the Light and Power through the Light and Power system itself will pay for those energy saving measures. I know we're probably one of only a few utilities in the state to do that, and I think it's pretty safe to say 95% of the utilities in the state are going to charge something, and it may come to pass that we'll have to do that too. But right now, at the current time, we hope to pay for those energy saving rebates and measures through our own system.
So there won't be a rate increase?
There will not be a rate increase at this time.
At some point, do these measures begin to pay for themselves? I mean, doesn't it make sense if you're reducing the amount of energy that you have to produce, that if people are using more efficient devices, that at some point you'll begin to save costs?
Well, there's no doubt of that. As soon as that customer changes out that light bulb, he starts saving himself, and of course his bill is less immediately when he does that. And of course, people have to realize that there's always two sides of this. You can change out all your lights in your house with CFLs and maybe buy a more efficient washer or dryer, for example. But then if you turn around and buy that a plasma TV, which takes about five times as much energy as that cathode ray tube TV that you just got rid of. So there's always a trade-off in these things. While you save energy in one area, it may be increased in another.
We're talking about carbon footprint and energy savings and efficiency here on Points North. If you want to ask a question or make a comment, you can reach us at 800-442-9422. or 276-4500. That's area code 231-276-4500. With me is Jim Cooper from Traverse City Light and Power, and Sarna Salzman from the SEEDS organization. Sarna, if residents begin to make some changes and become more energy efficient, and some of the Light and Power customers begin to do that, commercial customers, with these sort of low-hanging fruit like light bulbs, is that enough to get to the goals that you've outlined for the city and the county and the community in terms of reducing carbon footprint?
It's a great start. It's where we need to start, and we need to just keep the ball rolling from that point forward. So the initial awareness is where a lot of us are, you know, coming into the picture, and we're getting into energy efficiency through local food sometimes, and the low-hanging fruit is all stuff that actually is going to save folks money for the most part. And so that's really a win-win-win solution. And then we need to keep going from there. You know, we advocate for carbon neutrality. And actually, I advocate for let's make our region a carbon sink. You know, let's get some of those forests growing again and getting really old and soaking up all the carbon that that our neighbors are producing. Let's soak up more carbon than we actually produce.
But the goal was, what, 25% reduction?
By 2012.
By 2012. So what more would you need to do to actually reach that goal?
After that, we just get even more efficient with the resources that we have. Use less, use what we have more wisely, switch out the kinds of resources that we're utilizing. So cleaner resources, cleaner building materials, cleaner sources of electricity, and cut the peak usage. I wanted to add how lucky we are to have municipally controlled utility in the city, and Cherryland is a cooperative. We've got utilities that the people actually control, which means that we can get them to make great strides really quickly. We just have to be part of that solution with them. And the fact that Traverse City Light and Power is committing to not raising their utility rates to cover this expensive program that the state is forcing them to go through is really remarkable and commendable. And we can help them continue that trend by using less power at peak usage time. So in the hottest points in the summer, not doing the laundry when the air conditioning is running, turning up the air conditioning temperature, turning down your heat temperature. Those peak points of power usage, usually during the mid part of the day, those are more expensive times for the utility to buy power. So if we're cutting and conserving at those peak usage times, that's going to allow Traverse City Light and Power to do its job better for the rest of the day.
If the state weren't, as you say, forcing the utilities to do some of these energy-saving measures, would they be happening? I mean, how important is that state incentive or law?
Well, that's a good question, because I think in this area, you know, Traverse City Light and Power and the board has taken a step ahead on this, and a step ahead of the rest of the state, actually. That kind of started with the wind turbine back in 1996, which is, as the spring have been there, 13 years at this point. So I think the board and the citizens decided, well, this is where we want to go, and we at Light and Power, without any other state incentives, we started our own CF compact fluorescent light rebate program about 4 years ago, and we also are probably still the only utility in the state that does residential audits only for $10. You can get a residential audit, but it's going to cost you quite a bit, and Light and Power picks up the difference of that price for that customer. So,
and that audit tells you where you can save energy, right?
Right, and it's not just an electrical audit. We'll look at insulation levels. We'll look at your windows, look at the other things that you can do for energy efficiency on your hot water heaters, for example. We'll check your ceiling. So there's quite a bit of work that goes into that audit for the customer.
The other part of that law that passed last fall requires you to get a certain percentage of your energy, 10%, by the year 2012, I think it is, of your energy from renewable sources. And what are you going to do about that?
Well, in our strategic planning process, that we had quite a bit of input from the staff and the board and other citizens, and the board decided to to take a step further on that and require ourselves to have renewable resources of 30% by 2020. So it's quite a jump from the state standard. And we're going to do that through other renewable sources, such as the wind turbines. We're looking, as you know, at several wind turbines up in the Charlevoix area where we have an easement. We're looking to promote some more solar activity in town. The board's already purchased 2 megawatts of landfill gas, and that'll get rid of some of the methane that we're talking about here. And we're also hoping to see some local generation and near town generation through biomass or woody debris, basically, which will help neutralize that carbon footprint.
So a few years ago, you did a study on the west side of Traverse City looking at biomass burning wood chips at a plant. Are you looking at that again in that specific location, or how many different biomass plants are you looking at?
Well, we're probably looking at 2 or 3, and this is in the study process right now. We won't know what we'll be coming up with. That was the west side of town was a rather lengthy process, and we received a state grant for that, and it was a good education for us as staff and the board to find out what that's all about. And that's probably one of the reasons that we're looking at that now, is because we know it does work, and we've seen that work over in Europe where they've been ahead of us on this area for a long time.
Is there something about now that would make it more feasible than a few years ago?
Well, I would say so. And right now, if you're looking at the need for future generation, and all utilities are, you can achieve a lot of savings through conservation. But people are still out there. They're still buying more computers. They're still leaving them on at night. But I think that the price of these new generation assets are showing us that these renewable assets through biomass and wind and solar is going to be more competitive than it was a few years ago.
Part of that original study was to also use some of the waste heat, I believe, from generating power to heat some homes over in that part of the city, and maybe even Munson Medical Center. Is that still part of the picture?
That's still part of the picture, and of course, location is important, and we don't have a location. So with loads like that, that's called CHP, or combined heat and power, where instead of just having all that exhaust heat go up into the air, which is normal for a power plant, you produce it, that steam, and you run that turbine, and the rest of the heat is just exhausted out of the stack. Part of that combined heat and power is you take that heat and you use it for other sources. You can use it for commercial processing. You can use it for heating for homes, which is what we saw in Europe quite a bit. So we saw areas that were ahead 800 homes, and we thought, well, that's pretty simple. And then we go to a city in Sweden, for example, they heated 80,000 homes with one central facility.
Hmm. So that's still on the drawing board.
It's still on the drawing board, right.
Consumers Energy has proposed buying energy from customers who put solar panels on their homes. Would Light and Power buy energy back from solar panel customers who generate an excess of power?
Sure. Right now, actually, we're getting a proposal for different types of rates on net metering, for example. And actually, we have 3 systems in town right now at the MTEC. There's an 8-kilowatt system, and they absorb. They don't produce enough to sell back. Basically, they use all of that in the system, so that's just used in house and. In town at the depot, there's some other solar panels there that are just used within the house. And what we're looking at also is called a feed-in tariff, where that helps promote that increase in customer usage by building their own panels. And we would through feed-in tariffs, you actually pay the customer more for that energy, and that gives them a quicker payback on those panels.
So that's not set yet, but that's something that's You're working on it.
Right, we're working on that, yep.
Okay. We're talking about carbon footprint, energy saving, and efficiency on Points North. If you want to join in the conversation, give us a call at 276-4500 or 800-442-9422. Joining us now is Thaddeus Owen, He's with the Herman Miller Company. They're based in Zeeland, and Thaddeus runs their energy efficiency programs there. He's got a background in chemical engineering. Thaddeus, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bob.
This program that you have at Herman Miller has been used as an example of how businesses can reduce their energy use and become more environmentally responsible. You call it the 2020 Perfect Vision, and some of the goals you have for that are zero waste to landfills, zero air and water emissions, and 100% renewable energy. How are you doing in all that?
Well, those goals were set in 2002, and so far we're about 79% of the way there. So 79% to zero landfill, and we're approximately 50% renewable energy today, so about 50% carbon neutral as well. So we're well on our way on that path.
How do you get to 100% renewable energy?
Well, there's a couple ways that individuals or companies can get to that. One, and the most obvious way, is to use 100% current solar income, which means all the energy that falls on the earth comes from the sun. So all the energy we ever get is either locked up sunlight buried in the ground or current sunlight that comes as the sun shines. So one way to do that is to capture that current solar income in the form of wind energy, so windmills or solar panels. So if you put solar panels and windmills in a big enough quantity, you could run all of your electrical energy needs. In order to get your heating needs, typically people are burning natural gas. So in order to offset that natural gas with something that's considered a current source or a carbon neutral source, people like Ford and Zeeland Farm Services are using things like landfill gas. So this is one of the more renewable resources some people have in the area and have access to.
And what is Herman Miller specifically doing to get to 100% renewable energy? Do you have your own windmill or do you have solar panels?
Currently, we do not have any on-site renewable energy. It's something that we look at every year and look at the costs, and it's something I personally would like to see and am advocating for. But what we currently have is a mix of, we have a power purchase agreement with a wind power company in the Thumb region of Michigan. So we buy direct wind power from this wind power plant to give us our electrical energy for two of our manufacturing facilities. And then we buy what are called renewable energy credits. Most people refer to them as RECs, R-E-C. And those are green credits where somebody is generating renewable energy using hydro, wind, or solar and feeding it into the grid. And then we buy the carbon credit or the green credit of that renewable energy.
But you're still using a non-renewable energy, that, and those credits sort of just sort of pay for that in some way. Is that right?
Correct. The most ideal situation is to use direct renewable energy. When that isn't always possible, what you can do is you continue to use the consumer's energy, which is, you know, where a lot of our energy comes from, which is the typical brown energy, and then we buy these offsets to offset a portion of our carbon footprint from the energy use with green energy. So while we're not directly producing the energy and we're still consuming the brown energy, we're paying money to people to incentivize them to install wind turbines and solar panels.
And does that work? I mean, are there some little hidden traps in that sort of a program that you have to watch out for in to make sure that you're actually providing an incentive and that the money is actually being used to produce renewable energy in some way?
Yes. You know, with, you know, a lot of the companies that buy and sell and work as middlemen or brokers, you know, we've seen the fallout in Wall Street and how well we can trust certain entities. And what really happens is, in order to create a renewable energy credit that somebody can buy, it is required to have what's called additionality. And additionality means that the project where somebody put up a windmill or a solar panel would not have otherwise happened if they could not have sold that green energy credit and gotten additional money for the project. So if Herman Miller wasn't there to buy that credit, they would not have had enough money to go ahead and do the project normally. And there's some certification bodies that go and certify the credits to ensure that they are additional and they would not have otherwise happened.
So you're sort of investing in these companies in a way.
Yeah, we're investing in basically smaller projects throughout the United States to put more green energy into the grid.
As a private company, no one is really making you do any of this. It's not required. Why do you have such ambitious goals?
Well, for Herman Miller, you know, it started back with our founder in 1953 when he decided the company would be good environmental stewards. And as that program from the 50s until now has evolved, you know, we've just taken making the world a better place as an internal company goal. And so one thing, it's the right thing to do, and we usually find ways to also make it a business case. So not only are we trying to reduce our environmental impact and show other companies how they can do this, but we're trying to show them how they can actually make and save money doing this, because at the end of the day, most businesses are very concerned about the bottom line, and if it doesn't make financial sense, they're not going to be incentivized to do it. So we've been able to show that we can actually save or create a return on our investment for these projects.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. We're going to take a little bit of a break first. That's Thaddeus Owen, a sustainability engineer with the Herman Miller Company, headquartered in Zeeland with also facilities in Holland, Michigan. And if you don't know, they are a furniture manufacturer, basically. You're listening to Points North. If you want to join the discussion, ask a question, make a comment, give us a call, 800-442-9422 or 276-4500. We'll be right back. Listening to Points North on Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Bob Allen. We're talking about carbon footprint today with Thaddeus Owen from the Herman Miller Company. We're just talking with him. Thaddeus, can you give us an example of, say, an upfront cost that you had to make to make some kind of a change to save energy, and how much you're able to save over how long a period of time?
Sure. So a lot of our projects, which Jim had also mentioned, is changing out light bulbs. So we use a lot of light both in our manufacturing facilities and our office facilities. So an upfront cost is buying T5 or T8 fluorescent lights to replace. And that is, it can be, depending on how much you're replacing, a decent cost for the company. But we found that the return on investment for that is very big, sometimes well above 20% ROI. And from doing these light change-out projects, as well as things like we wash steel before we make filing cabinets, and that takes hot water, we found we could reduce the water temperature and save a lot of money that way, where today we're saving roughly $500,000 per year in these energy-saving measures.
$500,000 a year?
Yes.
Does that mean you've kind of gone beyond the what we're calling the low-hanging fruit, the easy-to-do first things? Are you digging deeper than that at this point?
We are. The low-hanging fruit were some obvious both lighting change-outs and then adding controls to the lighting so that they're not always on when nobody's in the building, as well as being able to shut the lights off when there's enough natural sunlight coming into the building. So those were some of the easy and low-hanging fruit and obvious things, but as we move forward, we're looking at more innovative ways to reduce our energy use and reduce our water use. So I mentioned the washing the steel. We turn the water temperature down. Well, now one of the projects that we're looking at is, instead of using chemicals or low phosphate solution in the water that requires a higher temperature, can we use microorganisms that clean the steel that require below 100 degrees Fahrenheit temperatures to run the wash water. These things take a lot more research and investigation and testing and a little bit more upfront cost.
Not every company has Herman Miller's capital budget. Can you give us any insight into how smaller companies can get this kind of payback and take an approach similar to you to yours without, you know, the amount of capital that you have to work with?
Well, I think there's a couple of ways, and one is go for the obvious low-hanging fruit. Talk with your utility companies about what other people have done to reduce their loads. So the changing out of the light bulbs can be something that's not too capital intensive. Doing things like making sure employees are shutting off their computers at the end of the day, or that the lights in the building are turned off at night when no one's using them. So some things like that can help if companies are interested in buying these renewable energy credits to incentivize others. Sometimes the credits can be fairly expensive depending on how many you're buying, but I would imagine that companies within a region, both for-profit and nonprofit, could get together in sort of a buying co-op to buy larger quantities of offsets at a lower price.
How much money did Herman Miller have to put up front in terms of making these changes to get that $500,000 a year return that you're talking about?
We've put up, you know, it's been an ongoing process. So it's been in the millions of dollars, but let's say, you know, one lighting project might cost us $6,000 to change out a bunch of lights in one office center. But that would have a 20% return on investment, sometimes a 40% return on investment. So within sometimes 2 to 3 years, it's paying itself back.
We're talking about carbon footprint on Points North. If you want to get in on the discussion, give us a call at 800-442-9422 or 276-4500. I'd like to get back to Sarna here a little bit. Go ahead, Sarna. Did you have a comment that you wanted to make?
Yeah, I think Thaddeus's point about the return on the investment is really important, because we need to start something Van Jones has been saying is a new math in this country and in our minds, where we're not just measuring costs, but we're also measuring what we save. So, excuse me, spending $6,000 to change out a bunch of light bulbs, we need to also measure that return on investment, that, you know, the $25,000 a year that is going to be saved for electricity costs, and put that into the equation up front. And that's not something that we've been used to doing. But when we start taking a longer view and measuring our savings as well as our costs, then these solutions start to make a lot more sense from a business perspective as well as a triple bottom line perspective.
So you're saying the business plan has to look beyond a year or a quarter, but take a longer view. Is that right?
Yeah, these are all investments that we're making.
Oops. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Attention. It's investments that we're making. You know, conservation is an investment in the future. It means that there's more, you know, conservation dollars that are spent means that there are dollars that are saved in the future that you can spend on other things, like your family.
And do you have any thoughts on what might motivate people to make these kinds of changes?
Well, I mean, money motivates people right now. And I think that that the work that companies like Herman Miller are doing, and work that municipalities like our city and county are doing, that are starting to show the financial costs and benefits of doing this work, is really going to help all kinds of people across sectors take similar steps. These are kind of early adopters right now, pardon me, but they're proving that the model works.
Jim, do you have any thoughts on some of the things Thaddeus was saying? I mean, are there difficulties in getting costs together for a utility like Traverse City Light and Power to invest up front and get some savings in the long term?
Well, I want to compliment Herman Miller there. That's they saw the future years ago, maybe. So I think that's where we're at now. It's good to look at all those things. And as these investments are made in solar and wind and biomass, these costs come down themselves. The solar panels, which probably over the last 20 years, the cost of a solar panel has come down probably 100%. And at the same time, they've become more efficient. And right now, Michigan is a big producer of solar panels. So there's a lot of gains on this type of thing.
But does Light and Power have to kind of struggle a little bit with, you know, coming up with the upfront costs to do something like, you know, change out the street lamps to LEDs? And is that a difficult process?
Well, that's a real good example, because what we've looked at and what we've seen in the literature and what we hope to be true is that these LEDs require a lot less maintenance. For example, the typical high pressure sodium, It'll last maybe 2-3 years. The ballast will maybe last 2-3 years. Then you have to change those out. So in that same cycle, you may change 3 bulbs in 10 years. And that LED at this point looks like it should have no maintenance. Now, we don't know if that will happen. We hope it will happen. But so you're not sending trucks out there and 2 people to change a bulb. You're not using that. You can use that truck for another resource. So that's a good example of some future savings. And plus the bulb is what we're seeing. It's going to use probably around 50% less wattage for the same amount of lights. And that's why we're doing a test on that to make sure.
So part of this is an ongoing experiment in a way. I mean, some people think that their energy efficient light bulbs don't last as long as they're supposed to, or as the package says they will, that you know, experiences are all over the map on that sort of thing.
Right. We do see that, and I think part of the technology of that has improved quite a bit. For example, around my home, I have a couple fluorescents. Actually, I have 3 or 4 for exterior lighting, and they're not as bright at night. It takes them a little while longer to turn on, but I'm still saving 70 watts per bulb over 100 watt, which what I would have had there, and I'm willing to put up with that. But in some of the CFL bulbs, they'll have different color renditions. You can have a white light, you can have a more of a sunlight, and people have to get used to that also. Some of them look pretty strange. You have those corkscrew styles, and people say, well, I don't want to look at a corkscrew style light, but now you've got floods that look just like regular floodlights. And actually, at the demonstration last Thursday night, we had people in at the Seeds workshop, and we had 2 bulbs on a display, and one was a compact fluorescent, and one was a incandescent light, and people could not tell the difference between the 2 bulbs.
So I'm wondering, Thaddeus, if you're hearing anything from your customers in terms of demand for green products or even carbon neutral type products. Is there much demand building out there that you can tell?
There is more and more every day. Now, in the U.S., we're seeing an increase. It's probably only about 1% of our requests today that we get a request for a carbon neutral product, or somebody asks for the carbon footprint of our product or our company. But we know that in the U.K., it's a requirement by the U.K. government that the chairs be carbon neutral before they'll buy them. So we feel that that's likely going to head over here.
But that feeling is really not enough to, you know, invest or try to get totally into carbon neutral products at this point, is it?
Well, you know, at this point, what we're doing is we're learning what the carbon footprint of our products are, and that's a substantial investment in time and resources to figure that out. And, you know, really creating carbon neutral products, the only way to do that is to buy carbon offsets. You can't typically create all the materials for a product, put it together and distribute it and send it to a customer without putting some kind of energy into that product.
At some point, with declining fossil fuels and increasing greenhouse gas emissions, some people argue that you can only get so far with efficiency. At some point, you have to actually change to other sources of energy, renewable sources of energy, to replace existing sources in order to make more progress. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, is that energy efficiency is really one of the first things we should be working on, because, you know, whether we're in a carbon-constrained world or not, reducing energy is a good thing to do. But at the end of the day, you can only reduce so much, where in our daily activities, we're all going to use energy in some manner. And what we want to be doing is using current solar income for our energy rather than non-renewable resources as our energy sources.
Do you see something like a carbon tax coming down the road?
You know, we do. We see, based on what we're hearing from the Obama administration, it looks more like a carbon tax than a cap and trade. We just saw released on Wednesday morning, the EPA has released draft standard on requiring mandatory reporting of greenhouse gases. They didn't really put targets of a cap and trade or a tax, but we definitely have seen the legislation move forward with this administration, and we certainly expect to see it before the end of the year.
So mandatory reporting would be sort of a first step in going to some sort of carbon tax, do you think?
That's what we're seeing so far is, you know, that EPA draft legislation, it looks like the first step will be mandatory reporting, and the second step will likely be a tax.
And how would that change your approach to energy efficiency or reducing carbon footprint?
Really, it doesn't change what we do today. We are currently measuring our carbon footprint. We're measuring all of our energy use, and we're implementing reduction projects. So we know exactly where we stand, and we will continue to reduce our energy use and continue to try to find more and more sources of renewable energy that we can use.
And we saw last summer with $4 gasoline people started driving less. I think there was a report that said last year was the first year the driving miles went down ever. So that seems to be a pretty good indication that price drives behavior. Do you see that as the best way to drive change with something like increasing prices or taxes?
I see it as one incentive that definitely appears to work very well. You increase the price of something for every unit you use, and people are very much incentivized to reduce their usage because for every amount they reduce, they're now saving more and more money.
Is there some way to make those kinds of large shifts in reducing carbon footprint that doesn't alienate people or make them angry, or but rather would sort of, you know, encourage participation?
That's an interesting question. You know, in my opinion, if you're going to tax carbon, it's best to tax it across the board, and it's best to be very transparent about where that money is being used. So if you are taxing carbon and using that money to incentivize by maybe 100% tax credit some windmills in Michigan that will provide renewable energy or some renewable energy research to get us to that next level, to me at least we're being transparent and we're moving in the right direction. That money is being used for beneficial things.
Tarna, did you have any comment on that?
Yeah, I just want to say that there is no doubt that our way of producing electricity and our way of life, the kinds of resources, the petroleum resources that we depend on, are changing. And so even though we're sort of in a crisis situation and the state of Michigan is in a real big economic funk, this is also a turning point and a point of opportunity, and that all the early adopters who are out there, all the inventors who are out there, and all the students who are educating themselves to be the 21st century workforce, like, this is the time to get on board with some of the innovative stuff that's happening. There's room for innovation. There's room for invention. And this state especially needs that kind of energy, and we have the potential to leapfrog into the 21st century and really become a leader for the country and the globe.
Jim, is it conceivable that a place like Traverse City could ever become energy self-sufficient, for example?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's conceivable. It would have to take a lot of input, actually, from the population and for the people to understand that. In our last survey in 07, we're going to do another one here in a couple months, a full 87% of our customers, and this is business and residential customers in this sample size, said they supported renewable energy efforts. So I think that's real commendable. And we asked the second question, well, would you support a biomass plant? And we had in this area. We had 41% who said yes, they would support burning some woody debris or biomass wood chips, and we had another 41% who said they didn't know, which shows our we need to improve our education as to what all that about biomass burning is all about.
So did you ask them if they'd be willing to pay a little extra, at least at the beginning or up front, to make some of those changes to renewable energy?
We did. I think that question was termed for wind turbines, if they would produce or would be willing to pay more. And I'm sorry, I don't have that percent. But the majority of them said they would willingly pay $5 more for that. And we posed the question, would you be willing to pay 10 and then 15? And, of course, the percentage has dropped off at this point. But I think at this point, Light and Power was the first utility in the actually the nation to bring up the green rate concept back in 1996. And at our past board meeting, it was discussed that we actually might eliminate the green rate, just because it is now every citizen's, every ratepayer's role to help support the renewable energy concept.
Why didn't that concept continue to build after the first windmill? Why didn't you build more windmills if there was people still willing to pay extra to do that?
Well, we looked in the area, and we looked at, we had other projects going on at the time, and we've actually been investigating wind energy for probably the past 5 to 10 years, looking for sites, and we put up a couple monitoring towers, actually, both on the east side and the west side of town, and we were looking for a location that we could put up, a number of towers rather than just one or two, and while the location that we have now is okay, it's not what we might consider the best for utility scale.
So it's location, location, location.
It is, right, okay. Whether buying or selling.
And I think just real quickly, you said the goal for Traverse City Light and Power is 30% renewable energy by 2015 or 2020.
Yeah.
But there's a caveat with that you're not going to be raising rates to do that. Is that correct?
Well, that's where we don't foresee that, but, you can never say never. And as time goes on, as dictates of the utility change, but we hope to keep with that.
Okay. We've been talking about carbon footprint today on Points North. Our guests have been Sarna Salzman, Executive Director of SEEDS. They did the surveys for the city and the county and the community on carbon footprint and energy efficiency. Jim Cooper, Marketing Manager for Traverse City Light and Power, and also with us from Zeeland, Thaddeus Owen, sustainability engineer with the Herman Miller Company. Thank you all for being here. Thanks for listening. Peter Payette helped produce the show. Jack Connors is our engineer. I'm Bob Allen. Have a good weekend.